Okay, you guys, welcome back to the Huddle Up podcast. My name is Megan Townsley. I'm here once again with Nicole Beckelman and Jake Burton. There's so much to discuss, so let's hop right into what's been hot recently. March Madness, you guys. This year's tournament has been absolutely insane. Tonight, we have the men's championship between Baylor and Gonzaga. I said it right this time, Jake. I think Gonzaga. So it's going to be a tough one tonight. Really looking forward to that. But I first want to ask you guys, what are some upsets you saw this tournament?
A lot.
I mean, yeah, this is probably the greatest March Madness, I think, in history. Tough for my bracket. I mean, my bracket got single-handedly dumped on by Sister Jean, so that was great, you know. Illinois looked like the best team, and then all of a sudden Loyola Chicago gets set up in their region. I thought that was a bad draw for Loyola Chicago, but no, the Ramblers were resilient, no surprise there, I guess. So, and then they made it to the Sweet 16 before losing to Oregon State somehow. So,
can we just pause and talk how my bracket is beating Jake and Megan's?
I had this thing where I was really trying to not put too much stock into conference champions this year, because we've seen conference champions before in recent years not take care of business necessarily in their conference tournament, but then they still go on and have a deep Final Four run, or, you know, go on to win the national championship. Well, Illinois, I just really did not see. I thought they were the more consistent team of the, at least the Big Ten. And they, I just didn't look like they had very many weaknesses compared to the other teams in the bracket. So I really, really liked them. I thought their big man, Kofi Coburn, was going to present a lot of matchup problems for teams in the tournament. And he did, but just, it wasn't quite enough for, you know, Illinois to be overwhelming. And Io had a terrible game. Their best player, he was averaging 20 points per game. He did not have the scoring output necessary for Illinois to take care of business against Loyola Chicago. So, yeah, it's pretty crazy. The way I see it, though, is offense bust brackets and then defense wins championships still. And you're seeing a lot of the most balanced teams in college basketball are the teams that made it to the Final Four. AKA that Houston Cougars team, for instance. Yeah, they got a double digit seed path all the way to the Final Four, but still they were ranked top five in offensive and defensive efficiency, even though they were a pretty average 3-point shooting team. So it's been a pretty crazy year. I mean, there were so many double digit seed upsets in this tournament alone that nobody saw coming. I mean, especially Oregon State too. Oregon State was, you know, they're playing hot and everybody's all believing the Beavs, but no, I didn't think they were quite that good. But, you know, of course, they got a good five seed and against Tennessee, who was very cold. And then they make this crazy run that nobody saw coming. And, you know, Syracuse, don't even get me started on Syracuse. I think everybody's still recovering from them giving a whooping to San Diego State in the opening round. So, yeah, it's been a crazy March Madness, to say the least.
You know, speaking of SDSU, a team, the first game that SDSU played this season was against UCLA, and they beat them by like I think 10 or 15 points. So I had UCLA going out in the first round of the tournament, and to see them get into the Final Four, I was so impressed. And to watch them play Gonzaga, I think we all heard about that game, we all saw that game, we all saw the replay of the buzzer beater that was just freaking insane, one of the best plays ever in March Madness. I was so shocked to see UCLA go so far. But gosh, that game was so freaking fun to watch.
Yeah, UCLA is another huge, is probably the biggest outlier in this tournament alone, because they were a first four team and they made it to the Final Four somehow. But they really did not look very good often in the middle of the season. And then even in the Pac-12 tournament, it's not like they put on the performance of a lifetime and had this major hot streak going in. No, I think they had lost like six of their last 10 games, I think, going in. They just did not look like a very consistent team. It was really a tough team to put any stock into. And then everybody had Michigan State in the opening round. Nobody even wanted to give them any credibility in that game. And sure enough, they show out, and Michigan State's inconsistency showed up in that game. And then they've just, you know, taken care of business, all the way to the Final Four, and they almost beat Gonzaga. They almost beat Gonzaga. I can't even believe they were in that game. And they kept it as tight as it was. But yeah, Jaime Jaquez, Johnny Juzang, the Kentucky transfer were huge for them. And yeah, Juzang almost single-handedly carried them against Gonzaga, but it wasn't quite enough because Gonzaga got the last shot, apparently. So
Exactly. Yeah. Well, UCLA kept edging the upsets out the last, you know, like 3 seconds of the game. I mean, upsetting Michigan, this final score was 51-49. But what I thought was super interesting was, Jake, you just mentioned Johnny Juzang, the transfer from Kentucky. He was red hot in the game against number two Alabama. He ended up scoring 28 of UCLA's 51 points. So, I mean, when you're talking about Nicole, you just had one of the best games of all time, the last shots of all time. Jalen Suggs, like that last shot is, I've seen so many stills of it, replays, slow motions, it's everywhere. Some professionals are even talking that maybe he'll go first pick in the draft coming up next year. So I just think for such like we talk about like these college players being so young, to have like a star moment like that is so insane to see. And I mean, now I just want to ask you guys, who do you think is going to win tonight? Like, that's going to be such a tough game coming up.
Yeah, well, you bring up Jalen Suggs, and I think the key to beating Gonzaga is stopping Jalen Suggs and Drew Timmy. And I think tonight we're going to see a really awesome, I'm so excited for this matchup against Donovan Mitchell and Jalen Suggs. These two guards, they're similar, and it's going to be these two one-on-one, it's going to be so exciting to watch. If one player can shut the other out, I think, you know, Baylor has it. If Jalen Suggs can shut Mitchell out, then maybe Gonzaga has it. I don't know. With that being said, I feel like Gonzaga, we have seen them be so consistent. That's a reason they're undefeated. So if Gonzaga can keep playing the same ball game that they have been this whole season, I think Gonzaga is going to come out with the win tonight.
Let Drew Timmy do his Drew Timmy thing. Also, you want to make sure that you keep Jalen Suggs in check, because he can beat you from just about anything. He has a ton of tools in the toolbox in his offensive game. So he's going to be very tough to guard, but I think they do have guys that can, they can switch on him and, you know, make key defensive stops, I think, when they need to for Baylor. But I actually have Baylor tonight. I do think that the Baylor Bears have been, I think they've been the most consistent team far and away this college basketball season. And they didn't win their conference tournament because they faced a red hot Oklahoma State team in that Big 12 semifinal. And they looked unstoppable that day. So props to Oklahoma State there, but then Oklahoma State didn't quite, they were not nearly as consistent as Baylor has been, just at least on both ends of the floor. And Baylor isn't like too lenient on any one single guy. They have Jared Butler, who can make shots for them when they need him to, but they've also had Davion Mitchell has been great for them at times in the tournament. Macy Oteague has been an absolute nightmare. He's kind of been like a Klay Thompson, just lighting it up from all different spots on the floor from three. So they have a multitude of options to go to. And I think just their athleticism, their defensive presence as well is going to be it's just going to be really hard for Gonzaga to put together a complete performance against Baylor, because they're just such a daunting team. And I don't know. I think they're playing just too well right now for anybody to stop them. And if you go back to Gonzaga's game against BYU in the West Coast Conference Tournament Championship, BYU was getting Gonzaga out of position on defense so easily. It was ridiculous. And that Baylor is can very easily penetrate the lane, drive the lane, get points in the paint. So I got Baylor in this one. I think Baylor is going to be the one that pulls it out tonight. And I don't think it's going to be much of a surprise, but nobody's really talking about Baylor the way they're talking about Gonzaga. And Gonzaga looks like this big juggernaut that seems unbeatable. I don't think that's the case at all.
Interesting. I don't know if I would go with Jake's takes, because his bracket's not too hot right now.
This was not my year for March Madness, 100%. I mean, I didn't even really start religiously watching college basketball till February. So if I had paid a little bit more attention to college basketball, maybe like I do with football, then I would have been a little bit more successful there.
Yeah, actually only 60% of people's brackets predicted the Final Four. So, I mean, honestly, that's a little bit higher than I thought it was going to be. If you watch the stats as every single like round went on, it was like the first three games, I think there wasn't a single perfect bracket anymore. So it's like, you can't really, like, there's no one that can predict any of this, but.
No, yeah, I started 3-0 and then after that it was 4.
I think for that too was the weird COVID season, you know, we didn't really get as many games as we normally do in a regular season. And it was hard for like the committee to rank them accurately. Like we had Oral Roberts, a 15th seed, going way farther than anyone would have imagined. Just like weird things like that happening this season. But it made it super fun to watch, because, you know, March Madness is all about the fun upsets and the crazy games. So we sure got that this March.
Except for Syracuse beating SDSU. Not that one. That one wasn't fun to watch.
That wasn't the best for our school. But, you know, it was still cool that we got to go to the tournament.
Yeah, that was a tough game. I mean, but yeah, back to the tournament real quick. There were a lot of mid-majors that did get, I think, underseeded in this tournament because those schools didn't get to play their typical out-of-conference schedule where they get to go be paid to play those powerhouses like Kentucky, you know, Duke, et cetera, et cetera. So Oral Roberts, big example of that. Ohio, the Ohio Bobcats as well, being a 13 seed, probably should have been a 12, maybe even a little higher if they had gotten some better wins on their resume. But yeah, there were a lot of teams like that, and committee did just, they did what they could, but yeah, the seeding was definitely not perfect by any means.
What about the girls tournament? Stanford won, that's cool. You know, Russell Wilson's sister, I'm all for it.
Wait, really? Wait, I didn't know that. That's insane. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's also been a lot of talk of the inequalities going on between both tournaments, because I don't know if you guys saw the video of the girls' weight room just being like a small rack of weights versus the guys being an entire room. So that's got a lot of talk recently. Hopefully in the next couple years, in the near future, we'll be able to see more equality going on there, because honestly, it's just not fair when they're playing on the same level. So that was a hot topic recently.
Yeah, and the NCAA came up with a statement and said, like, oh, we don't have enough room for the girls' weight room, but there was, like, this huge open floor, and it was obviously just an excuse to, like, make them not look as bad, but it just made them look worse. But, yeah, and I, like, we're at the point now, especially with social media, that stuff like this, you can't get away with it anymore, you know? There's a line that has been crossed, and people are going to call you out if you do something as dumb as the NCAA did in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was good stuff for women's basketball though, overall. I mean, I think viewership was way up. I forget where I saw the numbers, but I believe viewership was way up. And but yeah, there's obviously a lot of big problems with just the allocation of funding. I think it's like of the percentage of profits, less than 1% is going back to these programs or whatever the case is. So obviously there's still work that needs to be done there.
Exactly. Well, major congratulations to Stanford, and we're looking forward to see the winner of the men's championship later tonight. But now let's transition over to NFL free agency. There's a lot going on. Free agency opened. It was the 17th or 15th of March, and now it's kind of sizzling down, but I want to talk about some of the winners and losers of the NFL free agency.
Oh man. Yeah. I wouldn't say there's a ton of winners. Really, I think the big story of this offseason has kind of been the losers in this situation. So maybe I'll start with those guys. Actually, no, I'm going to jump to the winner real quick. My top winner far and away was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They brought back all their starters, first Super Bowl champion, to bring back all of their starters the next season, except for, I guess, Antonio Brown. I don't know if he's necessarily a starter. He's not that important to their success, I would say, but would be nice to have him back as well. But just going down the list, I mean, you got Tom Brady on that two-year extension. They re-signed Gronk for another year, $8 million. Then they brought back star pass rusher Shaq Barrett, 3 years, $51 million. Also got star linebacker Lavonte David, who was highly coveted on the open market. They got him for 2 years, $25 million. So he took less to come back and essentially win another title. And then franchise tagged wide receiver Chris Godwin. I was surprised he was the one that got the franchise tag. I thought for sure it would have been Shaq Barrett or Lavonte David. But yeah, they went with Chris Godwin. Kind of an interesting move. I'm not sure he's necessarily worth $16 million, but it's only for one season. They can swallow the cap hit for 1 year. And then playoff Lenny as well, Leonard Fournette, he will be back for $4 million. So yeah, this is a very good offseason for Tampa Bay. You're seeing the Tom Brady effect still happening, still generating out, Tampa Bay's just got it going right now. So yeah, they're going to be the team to beat, it looks like, next season.
Do you think with Tampa Bay re-signing all of their free agents, that's just their ticket back to the Super Bowl, or do you think another team can challenge them this year?
It's tough to say. I would say it just seems like Tampa Bay is the more competent franchise right now. They're just headed in the right direction, and there's a lot of question marks with pretty much every other top NFC team. So Tampa Bay is very, very easily the team to beat in the NFC, at least.
Speaking of the NFC, we saw the 49ers do some trades to get a first round pick. Who do you think they're going to take as their quarterback? Because, I mean, I'm assuming that's what that pick is going to be used for.
So they traded up to 3. That was big news when that happened a couple days ago. Did not see that happening. It was just an absolute bombshell dropped by reporters and John Lynch making moves. And, you know, they were very adamant about Jimmy G being their guy, and they said they'd move forward with him. He might still be on the team, but I don't know if he's necessarily their guy. And they could go a lot of directions with this pick. I mean, it seems like from what I believe personally, I think it's between Justin Fields and Trey Lance. And a lot of people like Justin Fields because he, you know, he's been a top recruit. He's been in the media for quite some time since he's been coming out of high school. I mean, he was directly competing with Trevor Lawrence at 7-on-7 camps since he's been in high school. So Justin Fields, people think that he 100% is a shoe-in for this pick. And then there's a lot of other people that have their doubts about Justin Fields. I am one of those people. I don't have him too much of – I don't have his stock down too much. But I do think Trey Lance might be the better pick and might be a little bit more of the attractive to the 49ers. Just because I think there's a lot of question marks with Justin Fields. I think the throwing motion, for one, it's a little unorthodox. And it's actually very similar to Dwayne Haskins' throwing motion when he was coming out. And you don't really want to be compared to Dwayne Haskins whatsoever. And I'm not saying Justin Fields is. I'm just talking about the throwing motion here. But also, it's just I don't think he necessarily has quite the arm strength and the effortless arm strength that other guys have shown, like Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, and then Trey Lance. So, and also the other thing is, I think there are some durability concerns because you saw in the semifinal he took that major hit to the ribs. That's kind of a reckless playing style. You can't afford to be running like a running back as a quarterback and be taking those kind of hits. It's kind of Deshaun Watson-esque as well. And Deshaun Watson, I mean, seriously, like, you don't want your franchise quarterback getting hurt. You have to teach these guys how to slide. Justin Fields hasn't quite incorporated that into his game. So I wonder if teams, that's just another kind of knock on him right now. And he's also struggled in big games. So the one outlier game, of course, was the semifinal versus Clemson. But I thought a lot of those games were one read throws and plays where he had to just make the easy read, make the throw. In that semifinal game, the one thing that nobody wants to talk about is the interception into triple coverage in the end zone, in the red zone. You can't be that inefficient in the red zone. I mean, that was just a horrible play, and there's a lot of mistakes like that on his film. But everybody wants to talk about the 6-touchdown game and how exceptional he is as a runner. Nobody really wants to talk about his weaknesses, and everybody else is just very quick to bring up the other knocks with other quarterbacks in this class, which is just a little weird to me. The thing, though, this is what it's going to come down to. It's going to come down to these interviews that the 49ers have with these quarterbacks, these one-on-ones. They're going to get a real sense of their character, how and what these guys' just personality overall is like. There's a lot of question marks about Justin Fields' work ethic, and a lot of people have come up to bat for him and defend him and saying that he is one of the hardest workers out there. I don't know. It's just kind of weird how there's a lot of people saying this, there's a lot of people saying that. So you're not hearing a ton of that about Trey Lance or, you know, Zach Wilson or the other guys in this class. But I don't know. It's going to come down to the 49ers' personal preference. Who do they think has the right mindset and has what it takes to be the leader of their quarterback, of their team going forward? So right now, personally, though, I would lean Trey Lance. I think there's less question marks, even though he has absolutely played less. You know, he has just way less reps than Justin Fields, of course. And that's a kind of a big knock on him right now. But I mean, he's got pretty much he has 100% the ideal physical build of what you want in your quarterback nowadays. I mean, 6'4", I think 225, big arm. Seems like he has a pretty effortless throwing motion. So Kyle Shanahan, I'm sure, would love to work with that because he hasn't had a quarterback that's that great of an athlete and pretty much has all those physical attributes that you love in your quarterback. Kind of like Josh Allen and Justin Herbert of years past. Those guys pretty much checked off all the boxes just from a physical standpoint.
Jake, we heard you mention, you know, three of the top collegiate quarterbacks this past season, Justin Fields, Trey Lance, Zach Wilson. But you didn't mention the winner. You didn't mention anything about Mac Jones. I feel like a lot of people are talking about him in the press, but there's good and bad things about Mac Jones. What are your guys' take on Mac Jones, and how do you think he'll fit in the NFL draft and, you know, when he gets into the NFL?
Well, first of all, okay, it's very possible that whoever goes to the 49ers could end up being the most successful quarterback in this draft class. So if the 49ers like Mac Jones, they take him. Mac Jones could end up being the best quarterback in this draft class just because he's inheriting the trust fund. He's going to be the trust fund kid. He's going to have amazing weapons and an amazing coaching staff just overall, and an amazing defense to complement their offensive output. So it could very well be Mac Jones, best quarterback in this class, if he goes to the 49ers. But in terms of Mac Jones overall, I'm not really buying the hype, just because from what I have seen, he is obviously a very limited athlete. When's the last time a limited athlete had success in the NFL, being drafted in the first round? I mean, you look at, you know, Dwayne Haskins, that did not work out.
What do you mean by a limited athlete?
A guy that can't really move super well within the pocket. He's not necessarily going to break off, you know, 6-7 yard runs on broken plays, or, you know, pick up that first down that you see Justin Fields and other guys kind of doing, you know what I'm saying? So that's it's just not Mac Jones's game. He's not necessarily going to turn a bunch of plays that when Kyle Shanahan doesn't have the perfect play call, is Mac Jones going to be the one that it can execute other plays off the script and extend the pocket and, you know, gain yards when the play isn't there? I don't think that is him. That's obviously not his game. So I'm not sure that's what Kyle Shanahan is going to want to be looking for. I don't see him being a huge upgrade over Jimmy G, because just from a physical standpoint, they are very similar. So that's why I think it comes down to Trey Lance versus Justin Fields. And because they have the athletic traits that are so highly coveted in today's game. And it's what works. And you go back and you kind of look at the history of the Shanahan system. I mean, looking at these quarterbacks here, I would say going back to just Mike Shanahan, when his dad has been running this system for years, and he's had a lot of different quarterbacks. I mean, the only two quarterbacks that even won Super Bowls in this system were mobile quarterbacks. And that was John Elway, all-time talent, of course, though, and Steve Young as well. But look, both those guys were mobile quarterbacks. Pretty much every other quarterback in the system has not been a very athletic quarterback. And it's kind of limited the system, I believe. And Kyle Shanahan, the quarterbacks that he has personally worked with through his career in the NFL as an offensive coordinator or head coach, Matt Schaub, RG3, Kirk Cousins, Matt Ryan, and of course now Jimmy G. So of those quarterbacks, who has he had an absolute ton of success with? Well, yes, he did get that MVP season for Matt Ryan, but look, they still lost in the Super Bowl. Jimmy G, he did get to a Super Bowl with Jimmy G, but Jimmy G's play in the Super Bowl arguably cost them the Super Bowl. And then also he made RG3 the rookie of the year in 2012, and that offense was humming with him as a quarterback when he was 100% healthy. And then he left the Redskins. So he did not see RG3's career the rest of the way. But you get what I'm saying. He's had a ton of success when he's had a mobile quarterback behind his offensive line. You got to think that's the direction he wants to go.
We obviously know that the 49ers, they want a mobile quarterback, and Mac Jones is not going to fit for what Kyle Shanahan's looking for. So where do you guys think Mac Jones is going to end up in the draft?
It's really tough to say. I don't really know how teams' draft boards look. I personally don't see him as a first-round pick. Other teams might say the exact opposite because he comes from Alabama. So it seems like he's learned a lot in the 1 year he was as a starter. So maybe there is still a little bit of upside and some untapped potential there. And there are some quarterback-needed teams down in the draft. I mean, they're still looking at these teams that are still in the – definitely in the conversation for a quarterback, or to make a move at least at quarterback. There are Carolina Panthers, Denver Broncos. They're going to be outside that top four quarterback range. So maybe those guys like quarterbacks. Also the Bears and the Steelers. It seems like the Pittsburgh Steelers, they really like the immobile quarterback, judging from they wanted to bring back Big Ben, and then they immediately went out and grabbed Dwayne Haskins as soon as he got cut. So maybe they really like Mac Jones and they think he could be the long-term answer there. Or maybe they're trying to work out Dwayne Haskins first. Who knows? I guess they like quarterbacks with questionable leadership and work ethic. So, but yeah, Bears and the Steelers, two very good rosters, obviously, without a quarterback one. And those low draft picks are going to cost them. So it wouldn't be very surprising to me if one of those teams went after Mac. Also, they could go after Sam Darnold or other options as well. Oh, also, that's the other thing. So, yeah, we had some breaking news real quick. Sam Darnold just got traded from the New York Jets to the Carolina Panthers. So it looks like the Carolina Panthers will not be going for a quarterback anymore at that number 8 overall pick. Maybe they might even look to trade down. So who knows? But, yeah, that's just one more quarterback move happening this crazy offseason. And I think this might be the greatest offseason ever just because of how much quarterback movement there was.
The greatest March Madness ever and the greatest offseason ever. What a great
crazy year. Okay, I had a quick question about you guys before we get off the topic of Mac Jones, but Obviously, the main problem people have been having with him is his immobility. Jake actually sent us a video of someone calling him a statue, which I thought was really interesting. But when we're talking about the game changing or have changed in the past, and like what's really key is that quarterback being able to do more than just throw the ball, because Mac Jones has been called just a dropback passer. But then when we're talking about immobility, Tom Brady doesn't run very far. He doesn't run very fast. So how was Tom Brady able to do it and still win championships? But now people want to draft the quarterback class of people who are going to be mobile. So I don't, is just Tom Brady just the GOAT, or what do you guys think about that?
Well, Tom Brady is obviously the GOAT, you know, yes. He has 7 rings, which, you know, but I think it's because he's so freaking accurate. You know, he throws the ball where he wants to throw the ball. He throws the ball where the ball needs to go. I think his arm and his depth and his accuracy make up for his non-mobility, his football IQ. You know, there's other things that can make up for the immobility of a quarterback. And I think Tom Brady's a perfect example of that.
Yeah, I think the other thing too is the poise he plays with. I mean, he has a reason to be confident. I mean, he has seen every pre-snap coverage. So it's very easy for him to dissect what the defense is doing before the play even starts. Also, I mean, yeah, and this, his IQ just overall is crazy. I mean, he's been in so many offensive systems. He pretty much knows every NFL concept there is to know. He's worked with so many guys. I think he's really good at maximizing other guys' traits at skill positions, and he knows how to get guys open and get them the football. But he's also extremely accurate. You saw the arm has not fallen off. And he had a great Super Bowl performance. I don't know if he missed very many throws at all. So, yeah, Tom Brady, I mean, he's just, his commitment to excellence, the IQ, the accuracy, it all adds up. And, yeah, you don't have to be the greatest athlete in the world to be a successful franchise quarterback. But he's just a serious outlier in that regard.
I think another player that comes to mind, you know, speaking of immobility, is Peyton Manning. I mean, he had arguably one of the best football IQs there was. His ability to like call an audible before, you know, seeing how the defense lines up. He was just smart. And I think if you're really, really smart, that can make up for your non-athleticism. I mean, we're saying, oh, non-athleticism, they're still athletic. You know, they're playing in the NFL. They're one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, but that doesn't exactly mean they're the fastest person out there, or, you know, they're the strongest. But if you're smart, that can make up for a lot more ways in sports than, you know, people realize.
Yeah. And I mean, the what it comes down to is experience too. So it's going to be really interesting to see how these top five collegiate prospects come into the NFL playing against the GOATs like Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or even like Russell Wilson. So that's going to be, I've had a lot of people ask me my takes on, do you think Trevor Lawrence is just going to just not play or perform well, or is he going to be one of the greatest of all time? And I'm like, I honestly, out of all of the collegiate quarterbacks I've seen, he has the best chance to be incredible in the NFL, but you still don't know because they're adjusting to such a different high caliber rate of playing and performance. So I'm very excited for the draft coming up. That's for sure.
When is the draft?
The 29th of April.
Oh, it's coming up.
Okay. Yeah. But speaking about other quarterback movements, I want to talk about, what are some of the most shocking quarterback movements you've seen, and which ones do you think work and aren't working or are not going to work?
Oh, so that's very easy. So these are my top two losers on my losers of free agency, this free agency period right now, Pittsburgh Steelers and the Chicago Bears, more specifically for what they did at the quarterback position. So you kind of have you have things falling around. They have a lot of question marks on these teams. And then what they decided to do is kind of make an even bigger question mark at the quarterback position. Chicago Bears went out, grabbed Andy Dalton for $11 million next season. And Ryan Pace already doubled down on Andy Dalton being the starting quarterback for 2021. Makes absolutely zero sense for a team with Super Bowl aspirations. They can't even win their division still. So it just makes no sense what they're doing right now. And I think that's just a really bad failed April Fool's joke. I think that's what Bears fans are hoping for. He forgot to announce it on April Fool's. So that's why we're all kind of like on edge, you know, are they actually going with Andy Dalton going forward? I don't know. It was right around April Fool's that he just kind of messed it up. Chicago Bears are pretty good at messing up things though. So who knows what's happening there. And then also the other very questionable team on this list is the Pittsburgh Steelers, my number one loser. And because they didn't get better in any way, shape, or form possible. The offensive line has serious question marks now with Maurkice Pouncey retiring, Matt Filer left in free agency, Alejandro Villanueva, aging left tackle. He's already 32, 33 years old. They're probably going to have to address that position. And then their top edge rusher, Bud Dupree, got the bag elsewhere with got paid by Tennessee, good amount. And then they also, so they went out and they decided, what's our number one priority? Not addressing these positions. Let's go make sure we restructure Big Ben's contract and lock him down so he will be back as a starter. Because it worked really well last season, obviously. And then also the prodigal son, Juju Smith-Schuster, he had a tough crowd on the open market, so he is coming back for $8 million this season. So I can't wait to see Big Ben, you know, trying to be the adult in the locker room with Juju and Claypool, you know, more committed to TikTok than the actual team success itself and their on-field performance. So, yeah, it's looking really good for Pittsburgh Steelers. And you know, those fans are going to have a ton to talk about in 2021 and not for the right reasons.
Hey, you got to admit, Juju Smith's TikTok was a great marketing move for him. I feel like a lot of people who were more into, say, TikTok versus football started to know who Juju Smith-Schuster was from his TikToks. I mean, I guess it, now I say about marketing move, I guess it kind of made him look bad in the NFL because, you know, he was kind of making a fool of himself. But he definitely got his name out there. I feel like a lot of the my girlfriends that I talked to, they like know who he is
because but did he, was it for the right reasons? No, that's the whole point. I mean, yeah, stock up on Juju's TikTok career 100%. Stock down on his football career though 100%.
So is that why Aaron Rodgers is hosting Jeopardy tonight? Because everyone's saying he should just quit football and just be the permanent host of Jeopardy. Do you guys see that?
No, I didn't. I feel like tonight he's gonna be a boring host.
I mean,
like as much as I love Aaron Rodgers, I was like Jeopardy. Okay.
I mean, he could. I mean, he could go out on top as an MVP. You know, and it'd be a nice little, it'd be a nice way to get back at the Packers for doing the things they have done to him, you know, last offseason. And they clearly aren't really trying to help him too much this offseason either. They let his top center go in free agency to the Chargers. And then they gave Aaron Jones a ton of money. So, yeah, that's not a bad route to go if you're Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, okay. So Jake just gave us his winners and losers. I'm going to give you my tie for quarterbacks. This is my tie. So Ryan Fitzpatrick going to the Washington football team. Now, I feel like the Washington football team doesn't get much talk other than the fact that their name is brand new. But when you're talking about them trying to fill their quarterback spot and like amp their performance, I just think Ryan Fitzpatrick is just a placeholder. He's just a placeholder. He's going to do okay for them. And I mean, in the past 32 games, he had 50 touchdown passes, and he's someone who's experienced in the game, but not good enough to bring them to the playoffs. So I just think he's just going to literally just be a placeholder until they can find a more permanent fit. I read up on some NFL analysts think he was a really good fit for them, but like I said, I just think it's an okay move.
Well, I think Fitzpatrick has just kind of been a placeholder on every team he's been part of. You know, he's been traded around so many times. Somehow he still stays relevant. He does his job. He does it well. And, you know, I guess more teams want him for some reason. But I think his clock is ticking and his time's going to be up soon. So hopefully he finds some success on the Washington football team. I guess we'll just have to wait and see this season.
Yeah, it was a tough offseason for the football team because they were in a weird position where you need a quarterback, but you don't necessarily have the draft capital to take your franchise quarterback and make that happen. So they went out in free agency, and they thought Ryan Fitzpatrick would be the best option. I have the Washington football team overall as the number four team on my wait-and-see list from these offseason moves and free agency so far, so I can't call them a winner, can't call them a loser. They're right in between right now. And I think the reason for that is because of Ryan Fitzpatrick. Will it be an inconsistent year for Ryan Fitzpatrick, or is it going to be a Fitzmagic carryover from 2020? We don't know. We haven't really seen him put it together quite nicely over a full season. But the NFC East is certainly easily theirs to lose. So it looks good for the football team. But yes, Ryan Fitzpatrick, make no mistake, he is a bridge quarterback. And I wouldn't rule out them taking a quarterback, you know, with that 20th overall pick or that second round pick.
Yeah, Nicole, I thought this was interesting for you, but the Seahawks also signed tight end Gerald Everett. He's the number three tight end, just behind the two tight ends that the Patriots picked up, Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith. And he's not at the same caliber that they two are, but I think any weapons you give Russell Wilson on his offense, that's just going to make their team even better. So,
you know, a few seasons ago, the Seahawks had Jimmy Graham on their team, and my dad and I were not frustrated with Jimmy Graham, you know, big, tall guy. But the Seahawks didn't use him right. They, like, why did they just throw the ball to him every play? He's taller than everyone else. Like, all he has to do is jump up and catch the ball. Stupid athletic. And the Seahawks just did not utilize him correctly. I hope with this new weapon, the Seahawks will use him right and you know, excel their offense. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Same thing when Graham played on Green Bay, though. He did not do much. Like, I remember I was super excited for that because my mom was also a Jimmy Graham fan. And I was like, well, I'm a Green Bay fan, so there we go. And he just honestly was just another placeholder. That's my new favorite term, just a placeholder. Any other shocking free agent signings?
Not so much signings. Well, I guess the Patriots, I mean, they were big spenders this offseason, but just because they were the biggest spenders, I don't necessarily think they were the biggest winners of this offseason. They kind of overpaid for a lot of guys, like Matthew Judon, Jonnu Smith, Hunter Henry. Pretty much everybody they signed, they overpaid for, like Nelson Agholor, Kendrick Bourne. But then they also got Kyle Vannoy back. I think his deal was somewhat team-friendly, so that could be a really solid signing, and maybe they maximize his talent, you know, like they did back in 2019 when that defense was ferocious. And then they also brought in Jalen Mills, kind of overpaid for him too a little bit. But yeah, Patriots were making moves. They were biggest story of free agency when, you know, free agency started right away, making all these moves. And people like to give Belichick all this credit. Oh, look what he's doing. Oh, he's loading up, you know. This team still isn't quite there yet. I mean, they're trying to give Cam a fair shot now as a starting quarterback. They're actually trying to give him some weapons. And I wonder if they continue to do that through the draft. It's not really Belichick's thing, but they might still do that. Yeah, it's kind of, I don't know, the Patriots, it's a really competitive division. So I don't really like their chances right now as a Super Bowl contender. But the Patriots are trying to be interesting, trying to stay relevant now in the life after Tom. So can't call them exactly a winner this offseason. They're kind of in my wait and see list category as well.
Life after Tom. Yeah, well, if you don't have the superstar actor and a quarterback with Cam, you got to have the best supporting cast. So I feel like it's just, I wonder what Cam thinks about them just like filling up all the positions around him because they know he can't carry the team. So that one's going to be interesting to watch. But before we wrap it up, big news, I think this came out last week, but the NFL is now going to a 17-week season. What do you guys think about that? I mean, more football is always better. So,
I mean, yeah, one more game, can't complain. I don't know how the players feel about it though, but I mean, they're getting paid a ton of money, so if they're whining, I don't feel bad for them. They get to play the game they love and get millions of dollars, so I don't know. I think it's a win-win. The NFL will make more money. One more game is more money.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I mean, I think this move, the biggest takeaway from this is it just kind of gives another week for some chaos to happen where, you know, a star player goes down week 18, actually, you know, because of an injury, whether they're playing in a game with playoff implications and it's a team with Super Bowl aspirations, and then you lose that player, how are you going to move forward without him in the game plan? So I think it leaves just a little bit of room for some chaos and some other teams to potentially, you know, make some big moves in the playoffs. So yeah, it's kind of interesting. I think players will have their salaries adjusted slightly for that 17th game. So yeah, there's not a ton to complain about. It is tough for players though to make it through the regular season already as it is, you know, four games at a time. But yeah, so I guess it is tough for the players, but hey, this league's about money first and foremost, and there's a reason they make the most money is because they do moves like this. So yeah, I don't know. It's great for fans though. Yeah, you get another week. So I'm not really complaining about it. It kind of messes up my record predictions. Like now I can't think of the Cowboys as an 8-8 team anymore. Like I have to think of them as 8-8-1. So things like that. So yeah, it's going to make the season predictions a little tough, but yeah. Overall, I think it's good.
Yeah. And with a crazy off season, it's definitely going to be a crazy season too. So very excited for that. Okay. Well, tonight we have the, once again, NCAA Men's Championship against Baylor in Gonzaga. It's going to be an insane game, so look forward to watching that. But other than that, that is all we have for today for the Huddle Up podcast. And you guys can go follow me on Instagram and Twitter at mtownsley2wise. And please add me on LinkedIn. I'm going to continue to plug that until I get a new job.
That was funny. Okay. Go follow me on Instagram and Twitter at nicktimeforsports. And hey, go connect with me on LinkedIn, my favorite app. I will definitely connect with you. Send me a message, DM me. My favorite place to talk is LinkedIn.
Just please do it.
Yeah, don't connect with me on LinkedIn whatsoever. Nobody does that. For Twitter, go to my Twitter at JakeWorton419. Send me a question, DM, whatever there. Give me the follow. Follow me on Instagram too if you want, at JakeWorton419, same thing.
Perfect. And we'll see you guys next week after the Kings win another game. And that's all we have for today.